You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottes.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottes from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This episode of the show, we're going to continue the series doing end-of-year evaluations for each player on the Nuggets roster. And today I'm going to look at Will Barton, a.k.a. Thrill, a.k.a. the People's Champ, a.k.a. Willoughby Buckets, one of my favorite dudes, and a guy who had a pretty good year. So I'm excited to kind of go through him. He also has an interesting offseason coming up for the Nuggets. I expect Denver's offseason will be a little bit more quiet. You know, it'll be on the quieter end. But he is the big storyline, I think, surrounding the team because he's really the one unrestricted free agent type player that, you know, he could be on the roster, he could not be. I really don't know which way to kind of lean in terms of prediction. I know which way I lean in terms of preference, and I'll get to that in a bit. But I don't really know how it's going to fall. So in the first segment of today's show, I'm going to look at his strengths in the and successes this season. In the second segment, I'm going to look at some of the weaknesses or failures. And in the third season, I'm going to talk about how, you know, how much I would value him, you know, price point, and then also things that he can work on this offseason to really make himself ideal for the Nuggets, assuming he comes back. So to kick things off, let's talk about the successes. 33.1 minutes per game. That's five more than last season for Barton. His minute total, he was really asked to do a whole lot. I think his season is described best by what was asked of him this season by the Nuggets. He averaged 28.5 minutes last year, 33.1 this year, so more than 4.5 minute increase, and that's quite a bit. He was Denver's multi-tool. He was the backup point guard, the six-man scorer, starter, secondary playmaker, primary playmaker, small forward, shooting guard. He did a little bit of everything for Denver, and I think part of, when we get to the weaknesses, I think part of what made him good was his ability to be that guy, but part of what made him less efficient and maybe some fans get frustrated with was because he was constantly moving around in roles. So, but I'll get to that in a bit. Career highs in minutes per game, points per game, assists per game, effective field goal percentage, three-point attempts, and three-point field goal percentage. And actually, the increase in minutes, I mean, it's not surprising. He actually also had the highest blocks per game, although it's like 0.4 or something, so it's not like it was that high. But his per 36 numbers were pretty identical to last season. And I think, like Gary Harris, when we get into some of the shot profile type stuff, it's pretty remarkable that he lost some of his easiest shots, some of his most efficient shots, but was able to maintain efficiency. I think that's a really, really good sign, because if the Nuggets can figure out how to get some of those easy buckets that they got last season, then I think Will Barton's efficiency goes up even more. But, you know, a lot of his shooting and playmaking, turnovers, stuff like that, improved this season statistically, even on a even if they stayed the same on a per 36 basis. He had the highest three-point attempt rate of his career, which is really interesting. Fewest number shots at the rim of his career. This is another thing. Fewest cuts, fewest shots at the rim. This is another thing that I've kind of been talking about how the Nuggets went away from what I think is their best identity that produced so many of these. And I think also just the team's inability to space the court properly with two bigs, and they played with two bigs for most of the season. Barton, another guy that is the casualty of that, is his average distance on his shot got pushed back quite a bit, and a lot of that was shots at the rim turns into shots right outside the restricted area, and then he took a lot more three-point shots. Jokic and Barton have a plus 8.5 net rating, just those two. You throw those two, regardless of who else is out on the court with them, plus 8.5 net rating. That's a 118.7 offensive rating, which is just straight fire. I think Barton and Jokic is one of the best Jokic combinations because of Barton's ability to knock down the open shot, his ability to pass in the pick and roll, to play make in the pick and roll in the DHO. He kind of does everything that you need to be able to do offensively with Jokic. And I think Barton, again, I don't think he's a selfish player. I know that's a a lot of people think he gets tunnel visioned, and that's certainly true, especially late in games. I do think he gets that Mamba mentality, I got to score, to him. But I don't think he's a selfish player. I think he's actually a rhythm player, and when the ball is popping, Barton is one of the guys who has the ball popping. So the more you kind of get into Jokic ball, the better Barton looks. I talked about a while back about the starting lineup with Will Barton at the small forward position only played 65 minutes total. So it's a way too small of a sample size to draw anything from, but it is an eye-opening plus 50, not plus 50 net, plus 50 overall. So they played 65 minutes, and outscored opponents by 50 points, a little bit less than, a little bit more than one game's worth of minutes and outscored opponents by 50 points. That's just absolutely absurd. It's a dynamic offensive lineup. Well, if you throw Millsap out there and you just go with Murray, Gary, Barton, and Jokic, a four-man lineup. Now, there's 483-minute sample size. A lot of that was alongside Mason Plumlee, some of that alongside Millsap, and then some of that just along whatever combination. Lyles, Chandler at the four, Kenneth Faried even, Darrell Arthur, Juancho Hernan Gomez. There have been a lot of different lineups, but that's a bigger sample size. So you talk about the core three young guys plus Will Barton, 483-minute sample size. They have a plus 10 net rating. So that sample size would be like a medium, smallish sample size. Not great, but it's pretty good. But they were so dynamic in those minutes that you have to be encouraged. He had the second most assists to Nikola Jokic behind Jamal Murray. Murray played more minutes alongside Jokic, but even on a per-minute basis, Murray edges Barton. But it also just shows you that Barton was one of the few guys that I think was good in the pick and roll. Not even great, just good, just average in the pick and roll at hitting Jokic on the roll. And that's so much that, to me, it's one of the number one things that needs to be addressed with the team. Some of that has to do, again, with the lane being clogged. Jokic was forced to pop more in pick and roll than last season. But if they can figure out how to get him rolling and get that paint open for those roles, I think that Barton is one of the guys that you can really count on there, along with Jamal Murray, maybe bringing other playmakers in. Maybe Gary develops in this way. Something to kind of keep an eye on. With Jokic on the court, 77% of his three-point field goal attempts were assisted. When Jokic was off the court, that number dropped by 10% to 67 or 68%. So when you look at his three-point percentage, and it was good this season, let's see, what did he shoot? That's his rate here. 37% right on the dot, same as last season. So identical, 37% from the three-point line. The two high career marks, but again, consistent and on quite a few attempts, 422 this season. It's a lot. 37% is good, but you realize that when he plays with Jokic, that number actually goes up, as do the type of three-point shots he's taken. Significantly more of his shots are of the catch-and-shoot variety as opposed to off of the dribble when Jokic is not on the court. So another number that perhaps goes up if he plays more with Jokic, or even just more with a primary playmaker, which I'll get to later on. And he's, I would say, the only, him and Emmanuel Mudiay, and Mudiay obviously no longer on the roster, maybe the only two players on the roster who can consistently create via dribble penetration. Murray, good at this as well, especially off of a scramble defense. I talked about that a lot in yesterday's show, recapping Jamal Murray's season, but how he can struggle sometimes to create a scramble defense, but when he attacks a scramble defense, he's very, very, very good. Barton's a guy that can scramble the defense. He's a guy that can go one-on-one and just get the defense moving and get them to react. So I think it's a really valuable piece of the Nuggets offense, something they would sorely miss, I think, if they lost him and were not able to replace it with somebody that could do something similar. To the weaknesses, I think Will Barton, more so than anybody else on this Nuggets roster after Mudiay left, was the scapegoat for amongst a lot of fans. I'm way higher on Will Barton as a piece of the puzzle than I think the average Denver Nuggets fan, at least based on the comment section, my mentions, things like that, Twitter. So I personally think he's a fantastic player who, he's 27 years old, but doesn't have a ton of mileage on him. Fans always love the young guys. I mean, and you, when you look at it, Will Barton takes away some minutes from Jamal Murray early in the season. Will Barton was starting or was finishing games over Jamal Murray. at least for like the first 6 weeks or so of the season. Gary Harris, same thing. You know, I think Barton kind of becomes the scapegoat because you always just want everything to be clutch shots, focal point of the offense, leading scorer, all these things. You want them to be the young guys. But I'll say this, 27 years old, Lou Williams is 31. Will Barton is going to get a 3 or 4 year deal, I would imagine, this summer. And that deal is going to take him to the age of Lou Williams, who is your sixth man of the year, most likely, and a really, really, really good player, really, really important piece of the equation for the Clippers, and was before that for the Houston Rockets. So I don't think by any means, I mean, Barton is in the prime of his career. I anticipate, especially if he stays with Denver, the next 2-3 seasons of his career will be the best 2 or 3 seasons of his career. So I don't expect there to be some kind of like athletic decline that takes away from his game. I think with how his shot has evolved, I think he is going to be better in the upcoming seasons than he was now, even if it's more or less pretty identical. I think slightly better. He took the fewest 3-point field goal attempts from the corners this year than of any point in previous in his career, which is really, really strange. It's kind of typical of high usage players. The more the corners are really a low usage spot for players to be. That's the guys that stand in the corner and spot up are usually the guys that's all they do on a given possession. He was asked to do so much of the creating and playmaking that I think he got fewer of those opportunities. I think if he played more minutes alongside, you know, more minutes in 3-guard lineups plus Jokic, I think he would have gotten a lot more of those corner threes. In fact, I'd be curious to look and see how many of his corner threes came in the 400 minutes that he was playing alongside Jokic, Murray, and Harris. That'd be kind of an interesting thing to look up if I had the ability to look at those types of numbers. And that's sort of the casualty of bouncing between roles so much, is that he was not very consistent this year. There were great Barton stretches. There were some bad ones. There were great Barton quarters and bad ones even within the same game. There was times where it looked like, oh, man, Barton's really facilitating and passing, and then there was times where it was like he's not passing to anyone. I do think some of that is his nature. Some of that, I think, or a lot of that, I think, is just the nature of when you're asked to do so many different roles. I am of the opinion that the Nuggets do need a primary playmaker who is not Nikola Jokic. I think the ball flows through Nikola Jokic. I think he's your fulcrum. But I do think that you need either a point guard or, more likely, in my opinion, a small forward who can be a guy that sort of facilitates things. Now, that doesn't have to be a starter. It could be your bench. One of the things I think the Nuggets need to address this offseason is probably a backup point guard. I think a backup point guard who just knows how to run the show would have really opened things up. I wonder if Monte Morris is that guy. I wish we could see more of him and have a kind of a better read on him. He's really, really undersized, but he really is a traditional point guard. And some of his numbers, even just watching him in the G League, his pick and roll sense seems to be really, really good. But he also might be a guy that allows Barton, assuming if he were to play 15 minutes a game exclusively with the bench, would he be a guy that allowed Barton to just attack? Because he's so much better when all he has to worry about is attacking. Not necessarily scoring, I just mean attacking. Put it, you know, catch the ball, where's the defense off balance, go, and then read from there. Read and react off of that. Whereas when you're playing the point guard position, you can't just attack every single time or else it gets really, really ugly. And I think there were times when Barton did that and he just attacked and it wasn't working, and then it looked like he was being a selfish point guard. And then there were times where, you know, he was playing the point guard role and trying to be the facilitator and read the court and get everybody their touches, but it took away from his attacking. If you give him a point guard who only has to focus on those things, I think you really unlock some of his talent. Where you really get into the issues with Barton this last season, and this is really more the issues with Barton overall, is defensively he's just not the guy. He's bad. I would say he's among the worst, in my opinion, among the worst defenders on Denver's roster at the guards position. He's aided by the fact that he's pretty tall and long and mobile and athletic. But he gets lost off ball, maybe more than anyone else on the roster. He just gets lost. He gets distracted. He loses focus. He's late to react, late to read, late to rotate. Off ball, he can be really, really tough. Coming off screens, statistically speaking, he was really, really bad according to Synergy. One of the worst, I think, either the worst on the team or one of the worst. Let me see here. Coming off screen, he's in the 22nd percentile, so really, really, really low. as a all of his metrics outside of the ones that are really low, but the ones where pick and roll ball handler, spot ups, off screens, pretty bad. Actually, spot up 62%, which is good for the team, but still relatively average overall. It's just how bad the team is. So so defensively, I just and I think that's an area where I'm probably less optimistic about his game changing at all. I think this is sort of who he is defensively, and if you look at Denver's biggest needs from a roster construction standpoint, they need some defenders, especially on the perimeter, to kind of contain dribble penetration and you, because you can't just run guys off of the line and funnel them to Jokic, because Jokic is an elite rim protector. You've got to be able to close out on shooters, but then contain at least a little bit. And I just don't know that Barton's ever going to be that guy. So that creates some difficult dynamics, I think, for thinking about what his best role is here with the Nuggets. And that's why I think his ideal role on this team is still a bit unclear. For me personally, I would love to see him as the starting small forward. I just think that works for Denver. Now, one of the reasons this is so tough is Malone has fought for three seasons, really for the last two seasons, with this team's identity. He just seems to not want to embrace this all offense, bad defense identity, you know, and not even all offense, but this high powered, you can build an elite offense with the guys you have on the roster currently, including Barton, and not just elite, top three in the NBA, but the sacrifice is you're probably topping out at like the 20th best defense or something, unless guys make massive individual improvements. And Malone seems to see that as a recipe for eventual failure in the playoffs, which I happen to agree with him, but heck, it's better than being the ninth seed. So but that goes to say that, you know, part of what I think about him and his fit is I would love him. I think he fits really, really nicely on this roster. But does he fit nicely with Coach Malone's vision for this roster? And that's the thing that I don't know, and that I think the front office will have to kind of take into consideration. He started my favorite Nuggets lineup just one time. Again, Jamal Murray at point, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, Nikola Jokic. It's my favorite Nuggets lineup, I think, you can, out of all the guys that were on the roster this year. They only played 65 minutes. I've mentioned outscored by opponents by 50. But that lineup actually only started one game, so we only saw it one time. And it was the second-to-last game against the Lakers, in which Barton was a plus 25 in that game. It was plus 25. He was amazing. He started three games if you just sub out Millsap for Plumlee, because, of course, Millsap missed so much, it's hard to get read on what lineups they played with. But when you put those four, three guards, Jokic and then Mason Plumlee, he started three games. They went 2-1. They beat the Trailblazers, the Knicks. They smoked the Knicks. And then the loss was that home loss to Boston where they lost by 1 point, and he missed the heave at the end of the game. So, again, you're looking at four samples of those types of lineups, and they were 3-1 against some pretty good competition, a couple big wins. And then the only – if you look at any of the lineups Barton started in, there was a couple different ones. You know, he started with Kenneth Faried. They won that game. Started with Torrey Craig instead of, I think, Gary Harris. They won those games. The only starting lineups with Barton that did not work were lineups that did not feature Jokic. If you remember, Jokic didn't start for like two weeks because he was injured. Those lineups failed. And then there was a couple times where Malone went to Plumlee, Jokic, and Wilson Chandler at once, which I think you can survive the spacing of Plumlee, Jokic, and even Millsap, Jokic if you have proper spacing at the three. Wilson Chandler just never provided that, so all the lineups that featured Chandler and two bigs were kind of ugly, including when Barton was playing point guard or shooting guard. So, but if you look at it when they had the three-guard lineup, it seemed to always work no matter what. So things to work on and the contract situation. I think the contract thing first. I would be very much in favor of Will Barton. In fact, not only would I be in favor, if the Nuggets brought back the same roster that they had minus Will Barton, I would be very concerned about the Nuggets missing the playoffs next season. Not just a little bit concerned, very concerned. It's funny, I talked to a lot of people around the league this year, and there were a lot of people, I mean, people are admittedly lower on the Nuggets than people in Denver, but there were some people that this year said, you know, I don't know if that's a playoff team. I think they're going to be a borderline one, and, you know, nobody really saw the Millsap thing, so I think both sides of that argument were correct. If Millsap had relative health, the Nuggets make it in the playoffs maybe as high as a three seed, but they were never a shoe-in. They weren't so much better than every other team that you're like, oh, that's clearly, they're clearly head and shoulders above all these different teams. I'm going to feel probably as bad or maybe even worse about the Nuggets if they bring back the exact same roster minus Will Barton, because I think Will Barton was that big of a piece of this roster, and trying to replace him with a player like Torrey Craig or Juancho Hernangómez, I just don't think I don't know that you get equal return on that. And I'm high on both of those guys. I just don't know that I think you need that off the dribble, create out of nothing guy. So I hope that the Nuggets and him are able to reach an agreement. That being said, the Nuggets are at the point now where every deal they sign, assuming they're 3 or 4 year deals, lead you into at least the start of the peak of this team. So if you sign Will Barton to a deal and it is an untradeable contract, the way that they have signed Wilson Chandler, Kenneth Faried, Darrell Arthur, and possibly Mason Plumlee as well, deals that you can't get off of, when you talk about 4 years from now, Jokic is 27, Harris is 27, Murray's 25. You just cannot have a contract that is untradeable. You have to be extremely and extra sort of savvy in looking into the future about what a player's value is going to be. And in that regard, I think 3 years is ideal. 4 years would be a little bit scary. 3 years, I think, is what you aim for. I think Barton is a guy who has had a couple three-year deals. He probably wants something more long-term. But I think if you're Denver, you have to be really confident about the number, the more years you put on it, because you could really get into a situation in which you have an opportunity to go all in if only you could trade that albatross of a contract. You know, it's hard for me to say what is going to, the open market is going to be this year. This is a year that I think is going to be interesting for a lot of reasons. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James. I think the market's going to have their eye on those three players, and there's a chance that a lot of these guys like Will Barton, who are a tier or two below those names, are going to be kind of sitting quiet and getting uncomfortable wanting to know where their market is. I mean, is a team going to... You know, there's teams that I think would say, yeah, we'd like Will Barton, but we don't want to take Will Barton if it means we're going to miss out on Paul George, if that's a possibility or whatever. So he's a team, you know, even a team like Philadelphia might be in the market for a LeBron James, Paul George caliber talent. They have the money for it. Will Barton would fit really, really well on that team. I think they need a guy off of the bench. He can fit. He can play the two, the three, the one there. He can do a lot of different things. Spot up shooter. I think he adds an extra wrinkle as a six man. But is Philadelphia a team that's going to be sitting there and waiting and waiting and waiting, thinking, hell, we'll get to you here in a week or two whenever LeBron calls us back? That's a real question. But I think, you know, just looking at raw player values, $13 million, if he was on a $13 million contract this year, I think he probably is tradable. If he's on like a $15, $16 million a year deal, I don't know that he is. And so that's kind of the way I think about it. Obviously, anything below that, very tradable for him, because I think he can be a six-man type talent. And if the Nuggets are able to sort of open up the paint and play Barton with more minutes alongside Jokic, I think his numbers will look so good that he'll be even more tradable. On to stuff he can work on this offseason. His three-point shot, I think, is a not an item of concern, but something I don't feel like I have a good read on. So he shot 37% last season, 37% this season. He's a career 34% three-point shooter. In fact, He 4 seasons ago, when he first got to Denver, he shot 28%, which was the best number he had shot in his career. Actually, second best number he had shot in his career. Then he shot 34%, then 37%, and now 37% again. And this is on high volume, by the way. This is four attempts a game, 5.5 attempts a game, and his efficiency has kind of gotten up to that 37% range. If he's a 37% three-point shooter, I think he is sort of who he is this year, which is a good player, very, very good player. If he's a 40% three-point shooter, especially if he can increase the numbers on catch and shoot, I think he shot 38% on catch and shoot, or 37%, somewhere right in there, which is good, not great, but good, then, you know, he kind of is who he is. If he can raise those numbers, then he's really good. And if you look at the trend, his three-point shot has improved. Is it done improving? Is he at the ceiling of his shot? That's a big question to ask. I think, you know, if he does improve it, then he becomes an even more important piece of a starting or slash closing type lineup, because then he's a reliable, you know, knock it down from the corners type guy. He needs to improve his pick and roll playmaking. I think that would really help. He's a guy that I think the details and footwork, he's a very crafty guy. He's very good at that. I know he likes to work on those things. Working on his game as a pick and roll playmaker would help Denver a lot. Denver relied on him so much late in games when they lost confidence in Murray as the pick and roll playmaker, when teams would trap Murray. But Barton was really just like better than bad, not necessarily good. So helping him there, I think, would be really, really good. His handle can get tighter. I think Barton's a guy whose game sometimes teeters on the edge of chaos, and he's turns the ball over way less than you would think for somebody that sort of looks the way he does on some of his moves. But nonetheless, I think he can get a little bit tighter with his handle, and it'll help his game age, into the backside of his 20s, but also just kind of help with his playmaking in the pick and roll. He needs to improve his focus on defense, and I say focus because that's really what it comes down to for him. He's such an offensively minded player, and he's locked in on the offensive end, but defensively he's just not locked in. I think Jokic is the same way. I think their defensive upside is higher than what they show, in large part because their focus is below the certain level of threshold that can make them at least a passable defender. And then he needs to improve his strength. He's a guy that's just so skinny and so small that as his game ages, he's 6'6", 175, which he might be the skinniest, like one of the skinniest height to skinny ratio guys in the NBA. He's the Corey Brewer body, but he can continue to improve sort of his core strength and defensively, especially, I think, is where he's going to be able to really have that translate. I love Thrill. I love Will Barton. Close seems to get along with Nikola Jokic very well, which I think is important because I've referred to this a little bit in the past that I think Jokic gets along with everybody, but there's very few guys I see him like necessarily close to. Well, Barton's one of those guys. Barton loves playing with Jokic. He seems to understand him and understand his game. Barton's one of the few guys on the roster, not few guys. He's one of the main guys on the roster who understands, like, no, give the ball to Jokic, you're going to get it back. And so he's a guy that I don't think you have to coach to say you need to look for Jokic. I think when he's on the court, he's always looking for him and looking to play off of him, and you need a lot of guys like that. The question is going to be price. Denver, I think, one of the knocks, I think, on the Tim Connelly regime has been to overpay in free agency, so this will be a big test for them. There's also the connection. I know that Barton and Tim both from D.C., and there's a history there, and I think the guy's, pretty close. Is it going to work out so that Barton feels, hey, we're close, I like it here? And I really do think sincerely he likes the city of Denver. Fans need to get behind Barton if he returns, because he's a cool dude and the easiest dude to root for in a lot of different ways. So is he going to look at that and say, I'll take a little bit of a haircut if it means I have a starting role and I have a and it's a place I like and I want to finish what I started? Then I think Denver gets a great value for him. If it's one of those things where he looks at it and says, I thought we were friends, aren't you going to give me a homie price and really beef that up? Then I think Denver runs into a scary situation. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out from the perspective of, I think it'll shape, these are the moves that start to really, really shape Denver's future. If you look at Denver's salary cap as its final form, Jokic is going to be paid a lot of money. Gary Harris is going to be paid what he's paid. I think after next season, Jamal Murray will be a year away from being paid, and Paul Millsap likely, in my opinion, likely to restructure his deal to make it more team friendly. So if you have Barton on the cheap, Millsap on, sort of an average contract, and Barton on sort of an average starter's contract, I think that's good salary cap management. Where you get hurt is with guys like Fareed, Plumlee, and Durrell, and Wilson. But three of those come off of the books after next season, and Mason will be an expiring contract that I think is probably more tradable. So Denver, only one more year of sort of salary cap touch and go with their salary cap. But signing Will Barton to a deal that hurts down the road would certainly put an end to that. Tough situation for the front office to be in. I'm curious to see how it all plays out, but I absolutely love his game and certainly hope to see him back in a Nuggets uniform. Thanks so much for listening, guys. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new episode.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.